Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There is no better group of ones for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. Many of you listening will, I'm sure, have your Christmas leftovers, including Brussels sprouts, in the fridge. But how did they get there? I'll be speaking to a man who knows all there is to know about vegetable growing, Mr. Colin Randall. And I'll be asking what goes into the sowing of sprouts, not just for Christmas, but from pretty well September right through to March. My thanks to Mr. Fothergill Seeds, sponsors of this podcast. Another portent of spring, the winter aconites are showing yellow in my garden. I think again the snow we had before Christmas and one or two really hard frosts and then turning a bit mild and wet is just what they needed to get them going. As soon as I see the winter aconites in flower, yellow, then, well, we know the days are going to lengthen and we'll soon be able to get out and do more. Actually, if you'd like to grow a few winter aconites, Hymelis the Latin name, then the best way is to find somebody who's got quite a lot in their garden and to lift a clump of soil with two or three and just drop those. They grow very well at the base of a hedge, somewhere like that, which can be dry through the summer. The aconites won't worry about that. And they will self-seed, and in no time at all, you'll have quite a carpet of them. Really great portents of spring they are. There is a bit of exciting news as far as I'm concerned this week, because in the New Year's honours list, Colin Squire was there. He will be OBE with his investiture in due course. Colin and I go back a long time, and those of you in South London will obviously know of Squire's garden centres from Twickenham, right down pretty well to the south coast. An amazing business, really. His dad started with just a wheelbarrow and a few hand tools and set up a landscape business. And then when Colin and I met, would be the early to mid-1960s, Colin designed one of the first garden centres at Twickenham, Six Cross Road. Really charming, lovely man, and very talented, you know, plays the piano and has a really good artistic sense. We've worked together a number of times building gardens at the Chelsea Flower Show, and I couldn't be more pleased to see his name under the OBEs. Congratulations, Colin. Now, when it comes to gardening advice this week, then John Massey from Ashfield Nurseries in the Midlands, a great plant breeder, has some wonderful hellebore, the oriental hellebores. And I note that he's suggesting that this is a good week to get cutting all the old leaves off hellebores. If you are growing the oriental hellebores especially, then the flower buds should just begin to be showing. And if you cut all the foliage off, then of course the flowers come up and they're not masked in any way. And even better, it avoids a botrytis disease that can affect the leaves. So there's a job you can do. If it's in a border and you've got to walk on the grass, well then it's worth putting a big board down. Because after all that rain, it's pretty heavy and a bit muddy. And you don't really want to compress the surface too much. Actually, another note which came in a Christmas card from the Robinson family up in Preston. Margaret tells me that they're already well on the way to sowing their vegetables for flower show exhibits next May and there onwards. You know, January is the agreed time, I think, if you want to sow the giant onion seeds. And their mammoth, of course, will produce some really huge bulbs if you sow it very early. It's a good thing, too, to sow things like aubergines and peppers. They're very slow to germinate. Take 2 or 3 weeks, I would think, even under indoor conditions. And they grow slowly, so they can just sit on the windowsill. You only need 2 or 3 seedlings, and then they'll be well up by the time they can go out into an unheated greenhouse in May. I need to sow fairly soon too some lettuce, cauliflowers, cabbage, the variety Hispy, and if we sow those vegetables now, then they should be turning in time for our display at Chelsea Flower Show the 3rd week in May.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There are lots of people that you work alongside for years and, of course, understand what they do at work, but you have no little idea of their background, you know. It's almost like double lives. I've known, for example, Colin Randall for a good many years. How many years do you think it is, Colin, that you and I have known one another and worked together?
Crikey. That's a difficult one, Peter, to start off with, isn't it? Coming back, because, of course, you came down to certainly remember from Torquay days.
That's right.
Sutton's.
Yeah. So we're talking to...
And you may well have done in Reading days, and I don't know, Peter, did you come over to early in when we're commercially... commercial company, Sutton's in Reading?
Yes, I did.
I'd have been out on the trial grounds working away, I expect.
Yeah, I did visit there. But Colin, first of all, before I forget, I noticed in the Kitchen Garden magazine, you often do reports on the Wisley trials, and I was interested in the Brussels sprout trial. You worked on that, didn't you?
Oh, I did. And one of the... unfortunately, the brassica trials, because Brussels sprouts were on that bottom row of the Portsmouth field, at the sort of far left of the Portsmouth field, looking from the top of the hill, which has got rather shady with large trees, and so the poor old Brussels sprouts did struggle.
Not the
best of places to have put them, I'm afraid.
No, but when I read the report, it said that you tasted them and that you ate them raw as well as cooked. Is that right? You actually taste them when you do those trials?
Yeah. I do with the vast amount of any vegetable trial, do a raw taste test and a cooked one. But it was sort of deemed that in this instance, it was important that the committee did do some tastings. It's not always been the case, and they're quite very enjoyable. Some perhaps a bit more enjoyable the taste, like tomatoes and that, with some of the committee than trying to nibble raw sprouts. I do it all the time at the commercial trials, nibble away at all sorts of things.
And I have too, you know. I think it's the quickest way, isn't it, don't you think?
Definitely.
If you're going down a row of 10 or 20 different varieties, a quick nibble and a spit out, and a nibble and a spit out, Boy, it doesn't half sort the wood from the trees. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
But with sprouts, they've got a lot sweeter, haven't they? Don't you think?
Yeah,
that...
it's rather an unfortunate word. Well, it might be overused in our trade a little bit. The sweeter context, which you don't really associate with Brussels sprouts, do you? I suppose. In olden or pre-hybrid days, I suppose, with the old Bedfordshire and Evesham, Cambridgeshire OP sprouts that everyone would have had to have grown, I was only a lad then. I was better meant to point to that, I suppose. my gran had a few in the garden, and she always said that they had a better taste after lots of frosts on them.
Yeah.
I suppose that was in the days of getting a proper winter, I suppose.
Yeah,
in recent years.
I should explain to our listeners that we're interrupting your work today, so there will be a little bit of background conversation there. But when we go back to the sprouts, I mean, that's the mustard oils sort of gave them that strong taste, didn't they? And I noticed that schools, the kids are eating sprouts now in a way that... youngsters would have been a bit reluctant in the past, because I think they are much milder flavoured.
I mean, certainly the mustard oil contents have been reduced to a certain extent, so you don't get the bitter aftertaste or the sort of lingering harshness of some of the old Brussels sprout varieties. And to be fair, some of the modern commercial ones. And when I was speaking to a couple of the brassica breeders in recent years, they said that a lot of them still prefer the tinnier, harsher taste of a Brussels sprout than some of those that have had the those compounds reduced.
Yeah, in some sense.
So it's like everything, isn't it? You're not going to one cap fits all for all these products.
Well, I think older people will probably go for a slightly stronger taste, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not too harsh, which you can pick up to a certain extent on a raw nibble.
Yeah.
And I've done that a lot at Nickerson's trials in recent years with Julie Cormack and Barry Craven, who's recently retired just before... back in the autumn, November, after many years, and he was a sort of real Brussels sprout guru, and we'd done lots of raw taste tests, and that's where the newer material is being more widely used, I suppose. And
well, now, Colin, for our listeners, what will you be sowing this year then? For the ordinary gardener who just grows probably 6 or 10 plants, what would you go for? What would your recommendation be?
Well, it's a difficult one with Brussels sprouts as such, because they're aimed at the Christmas market, aren't they, for general use. I mean, you and I remember Peer Gynt when it was out. End of September, and it had finished long before the cooler nights of autumn and winter was setting in. But it was a household favourite, and
But we can't get that now. So what is
the
Peer Gynt alternative?
Well, Oliver replaced it from the same breeder, and then that went the same way.
now you're no help to me at all.
So it did sort of show the. I suppose a time that the Brussels sprouts were not really geared up for a late summer, autumn maturity. But the world has, what goes round comes round, and there is still breeding work on some of the earlier maturing varieties.
I mean, you
notice it with Savoys. You get summer Savoys, and they can be pretty popular because, again, they've got that taste factor just shredded up in your summer salads, and they haven't got the harsh mustard oil taste of some of the older fashioned ones.
When Colin, I'm growing Brilliant, and mm-hmm. thinking
very
about
good old variety, yeah. Well, fairly old nowadays.
And thinking of growing Maximus.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see in the trials, is it Doris? It is a good
Doric. D-O-R-I-C.
Yeah,
that's
it's a good late one.
Yeah. I mean, of the from the RHS trial, it did highlight a couple of points really, and there was a couple that were given awards that on rechecking, which I was doing at that time on quite a few of the to just to get confirmation from the breeders or suppliers that the that they would be available for gardeners over at least a couple of a year period. Appreciate that hybrids don't stay in the marketplace for too long, and two of them that were awarded that were available, of course, various of the seed houses were selling them, Green Marble and Bronte, were being discarded or deleted by the breeders.
Right.
And so there would be the seed availability was ongoing, was going to be zero. So I just had to make a point to the trials office on that, and it's up to them then whether to not accept the AGM, because it would not be available for any length of time.
Yeah, it's difficult,
but
isn't
one
it?
It is very difficult. One that did, we put MART, M-A-R-T-E, we introduced that one into the range the current season we're in. And for next season, we've got Atwood, which is one that Mr. Fothergill's had or have. It was from Guy Warren's little program when he was still doing a bit over on the old Bedfordshire site.
Right. And they're both F1s.
They're both F1s.
Yeah.
Brodie's a later one. And that one has didn't get an AGM in the first two assessments. But on the third assessment in January that we did at the time, until the picking ceased on the, I believe it was the end of the first week of February, the whole trial was scrapped, even though a couple of the varieties like Atwood were still doing reasonably well. And that one got an AGM on its third note with the committee present. And that's one we're doing for the new season. So that's a bit of British breeding through Guy Warren.
So,
very nice variety.
So if you had to choose one, Atwood could well be on your list.
It could, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Sutton's at Reading, which is years ago. Did you actually start as a leaving school at Sutton's?
Very close. It was sort of 18 months in between, leaving school and working for a market gardener. A fairly new enterprise at that time, just outside of Newbury, and in a big walled garden at Hampstead Marshall. And but he found that he couldn't really afford to keep anyone sort of to learn the trade to sort of keep me afford me, I suppose, even though those days wages were pretty low.
They were, yeah.
And so he just sort of gave me time to try and sort me something out, and I applied. There was a tiny job, I think it was advertised in the Newbury Weekly News, at Donington Castle House, Derek Parker Bowles's house in just outside of Newbury at Donington.
So, and I mean, is that the Duchess's family?
That would have been the link with Camilla, through Camilla Parker Bowles, through Derek's elder son, Andrew.
Oh, right. Yeah, so did you see her then as a young lad?
No, though. Any time there was royalty due, who might have been at the races, at Newbury Races, and then popping up for a cup of tea at the house before they went back to their various places, I had to be at the far end of the garden, well out of sight, never anywhere near the house.
Oh, right.
I had advance warning that there's visitors and... I would not be anywhere nearby.
Oh, the old them and us, eh? Yeah.
The old head gardener was very strict, Alfred Hayden. But it taught me a lot. And in 15 months I was there, I suppose, and Derek Parker Bowles died suddenly. And the estate was house and estate, because they had quite a lot of fields. They had stables and that for horses and a few cattle as well. And so I had to try and find back to the drawing board a bit, and just my cousin was at that time a rep for Jiffy's, getting Jiffy Sevens into the marketplace from Scandinavia. Sort of, I think it was getting that was instrumental in getting all that into that.
So that will have been the early day of peat pots too, won't it?
Yeah,
Jiffy's,
Putting some mortar and see them swell.
Yeah.
Rather, you know, cool, what's this?
Yeah.
And he supplied Sutton's with various sundries, and just having a chat, and he said, I'll see if they're looking for anyone at Sutton's. And they were looking for some new blood. There was quite a few old timers there, and so I was there for an interview, and took me on in November 69, that was.
I mean, at those times, they were amazing trials, weren't they? At Reading, both sides of the railway line, it sort of stretched out.
All those everyone was leaning out their carriage windows, weren't they, on non-wet days to look at the wonderful sight of things. And there was over 40 acres there of trial land, and a bit of seed production, of course, big greenhouses as well.
Yeah.
In one corner.
Goodness. Keep finding those fantastic new garden vegetables for us, and I hope to speak to you again soon. Thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Peter.
I see quite a big report on feeding birds. Did you know that ladies buy 56% of all the wild bird food, and we men are a bit mean, it seems. There's only 44% of us that are buying food to feed the birds. Mind you, I don't buy very much, I have to admit. But then my garden has quite a lot of seed heads for the seed-eating birds. We have berries on the pyracantha and the holly. I'm putting out a few rotten apples so that the blackbirds and the thrushes can have something. There's two ways of feeding birds. I'm surprised, really, how much some people spend. The average spend in garden centres, apparently, is £29.94 by the ladies and £22.60 by the men. Quite a lot of money, isn't it, to feed the birds. Thanks again to our sponsor, Mr. Fothergill Seeds, and my producer, Charlie Jones. And thank you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.